welcome back once again for the Parish of the Patriots, 374th installment. They just keep racking up. We'll be at 375 at the next show. And who knows, 400 will be here before we know it. I'm glad you joined us this week. If you do get something out of the show this week, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We've got the snail mail down here in the description for the show. Addressing an envelope, that's the only way. I don't have any of the cryptocurrency stuff or any of that. So if you want to throw a little something in the plate, it is always very much appreciated. You know, last week, I forgot to go check my mail. I didn't forget this week. And as a result, I got blessed with a very nice card from Triangle Whip. Appreciate it, Triangle Whip. And yeah, that gets us through the listener supporter mailbag. I don't really even know. This way, I'm recording, by the way, programming. I usually have taken up this thing where I like to tell you when I'm recording the show. It kind of gives you some context. And as I always say, if the world blows up on Monday, that's what I'm not talking about, because I am recording the show this week. I'm back on my Saturday routine, recording this show on Saturday. So if something big happens, that's why we're not talking about it. And I'll be honest, I'm not even sure what I mean, even more so than usual. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about today. I mean, I've got a few things. I usually jot a few things down during the week. And that kind of gives me at least some framework. You know, obviously, there's no script. This is, I always do. I've always done this. Flying by the seat of my pants. Sometimes it shows. Some days it shows more than others. But this week is especially so. I've got a few things jotted down I could launch off from. But here's my dilemma. I really don't feel like talking about politics today. We always wind up seeming, and I'm sure will, feel like it or not, I'm sure I'll still talk about politics, but I'm just, it's all, it's all so staged, you know, fake. So many of the things surrounding all of it, you know, the media circus, it's all fake. You know, where there's been in the news that, you know, Ben Shapiro's Daily Wire, which everybody, we were told, boy, that is, that it's a, you know, media monster. You know, it's a Goliath, boy. It's just like that. For whatever reason, the money stream has dried up and they're basically going away now. Because it's just fake. You see, it's like how Trump went on. See, I said I wasn't going to talk about politics, but these are just observations. Like I said, this may be more rambling, and it may be more fun. I'm hoping it's more fun with a little more rambling this week. See, I don't even have any of this jotted down. This is just what comes to mind as we have our discussion this week. Yeah, you know, Trump went to his trip to China. And he had all these, you know, tech billionaires. And, you know, even these, because we talk about these guys and their big plans, you know. And some of them, you know, yeah, obviously they've got some push. But some of it is obviously, again, more, you know, like Elon Musk. Elon Musk is one of my favorite examples. Elon Musk is as real as, you know, as far as the way he's portrayed. He's as real as the Daily Wire was. Media Goliath. You know what I mean? Here are these guys. He takes these tech billionaire CEO guys or whatever on this trip to China. And there's, you know, there they are sitting, I don't know, in some prestigious Chinese facility. You know, great architecture, Eastern architecture around them. All very impressive. I'd love to go see such things. And, you know, this is being framed up. It's narrated as this very important state visit. You know, President Trump going to meet Xi Jinping. High stakes. And there's Elon Musk taking selfies, making goofy faces. I mean, honestly, first thing that popped in my mind is he looked like a little kid picking his nose in church. You know, everybody's just, the only question in anybody's mind is he going to eat his boogers? I mean, he's taking these selfies, making goofy faces. The man is like my age, you know, and he's over here acting like an adolescent. And I'm thinking this, and I'm reminded once again, this is the guy we're told he's some kind of just crazy super genius. That's why he's so rich. He's a crazy super genius. Now, I know there's been genius people in the past, you know, who were eccentric. They can tend to be eccentric, or at least appear that way, because they're operating on an intellectual level that is so far above the rest of us, you know, like an actual Tesla, the person, not this ripoff car company that Elon Musk has, but Tesla, you know, the guy. And he was, wow, he was inarguably by anybody a genius. He was brilliant. And he never became a super kajillionaire. That's kind of weird, isn't it? But somebody like that, I mean, somebody who operates multiple levels on a higher IQ, higher intellect than you or I, that person is naturally going to be quote unquote eccentric, maybe weird in some ways, because he's just operating on a viewpoint and a level that the rest of us don't grasp. It doesn't bother me. You know, some people get really, they're really insecure about talking about, you know, somebody else being smarter than they are. And I find that very silly. They're, you know, it's like being a fighter. You know, you may be a good fighter, maybe an average fighter. You may be never thrown a punch in your life. But here's the thing. Any fighter, actual fighter understands is there's always going to be somebody who can whip your ass. I mean, there's always going to be somebody stronger. There's always going to be somebody on that particular day is a little better than you are. And, you know, that comes, you know, that brings humility. It doesn't bother me to talk about, you know, I consider myself just an average guy. You know, I don't consider myself at all as being super smart. If I have a talent at all when it comes to viewing the things we discuss on this show, it is to quiet my mind and seek the Lord, of course, the most important thing. And as far as the things in this world, just to dial out the BS, step back, and actually try to look at what we do know and how the pieces fit together. That's it. Nothing super intelligent. But somebody who's really, you know, smart, like a Tesla, you know, a person like that operates on a different level. And I don't think it should ever bother anybody to say, yeah, that guy's way smarter than me. Or listen to what he has to say. A biblical fool can't do that because his pride doesn't allow him. And he just winds up flaunting his ignorance. There's nothing wrong with being ignorant. There's a lot of things I'm ignorant about. There's a lot of things I used to be ignorant about that I'm glad to say I'm not ignorant about that anymore. There's lessons I have learned, things I have overcome. And now I'd like to think a better, if not a better, at least a more mature person for it. And I think we should always have that viewpoint when it comes to other people. Other people, you know, they may start off over here, but as they mature and grow and learn things, you know, you're going to see some changes there. You ought to be growing. I'm getting further and further away from Elon Musk, looking like a kid fixing to eat his boogers in China. But maybe I ought to wrap that point up before I keep wandering off. It's fate. Just the fact that you look at this guy and he looks like a goober. He does not look like an eccentric billionaire. He just looks like a goober who's playing a role. He's an actor. He's playing a role. Look at Zelensky in Ukraine. The guy is literally an actor. And he's been playing the role of the president of Ukraine now for years. You know, but he's still an actor playing a role. And I've been playing the role so long, he's kind of lost touch with reality, but he's an actor playing a role. I believe a lot of these guys you see, you know, like Elon Musk being one that really sticks out. I mean, just because he's so obviously, again, kind of a goober, he's just an actor, you know, playing a role. To me, that's my impression. There you go. That's my impression. That's my opinion. But I mean, I think it's for me, from my viewpoint, that's just obvious. Just playing a role. You know, they tell us how rich this guy is. They tell us how rich all these guys are. But you know the old adage, it takes money to make money. And if these guys are super kajillionaires, Elon Musk is supposedly, he is or he's on the verge of becoming the world's first trillionaire. It takes money to make money. So where did the money come from? You know, where did this start? How did it grow? They play the role of front man. You know, that's because you say, well, what would be the purpose of that? And I'm going to tell you the purpose of it. The way I view it is playing the role of a front man. You know, you create this story, you know, this narrative, this legend. This guy who came up, invented these electric cars because he's such a genius. He even named the electric cars after the genius guy. And became a billionaire because he's so smart. Never mind that a lot of that money didn't come from selling electric cars. It came from selling the carbon credits, which was just an invented money scam. Everything in this country is economically is some form of money scam. So the government invents this idea that, you know, you have to pay a credit for your carbon footprint manufacturing these automobiles. And lo and behold, this guy, just by pure coincidence, probably because he's a super genius, is perfectly poised because he's a car company and he has all these carbon credits. Wow, it's almost like somebody would have to know this was going to be issued. You know, this requirement years before was going to be have to be issued. So you got to be in perfect position with your electric car company and you get your carbon credits, which you don't use any of them because you're an electric car company. You have a captive market. Ford, GM, Stellantis, which is Dodge, Chrysler, Jeep, and a bunch of European companies that no one gives a shit about. They've got to buy your carbon credits and whoa, you're a billionaire. Wow, just all worked out. You see, they like to sell the fable. If you had a situation to where, say, I'm just picking, I'm not claiming it's them, but it could be them. They can't create, it wouldn't have the same effect to people to say, you know, BlackRock just so happened to create this electric car company, which just so happened to be perfectly poised to make billions of dollars off of selling carbon credits when the government mandated that. People would be like, oh, wow, it's almost like, I don't know, they all work together. They're all one and the same. So they create this story, you know, of the crazy eccentric guy who just so happened to be perfectly poised to make these electric cars. You know, Tesla, I read a deal here a while back because I don't care about Teslas. You know, I'm not one of those people that, like, if I see somebody driving one, I have some weird emotional hatred for them or something. You know, I don't give a shit. If you're listening to this and you drive a Tesla, I'm not making fun of you, like, in the least. I don't care. Drive what you want. It's your money. But I read a deal recently that said Tesla basically they haven't had a new model. Like, basically, the Teslas, for all practical purposes, you know, updates aside, the Teslas they're selling now are the same ones they were selling, like, 10 years ago. Well, it's almost like the whole purpose of the company is really beside what they say it is. Now, I said I would make fun of you if you drive a Tesla, because I don't care. You buy what you want. But if you got one of them cyber trucks, I am going to make fun of your ass. If I go down the road and I see somebody driving a Tesla, I don't care. You know, I don't sit there and mock them. And there's a few of them I think still, you know, they look pretty sleek. But if I see you driving down the road in one of those four-wheel dumpsters, because it literally looks like a dumpster, yeah, I'm still going to laugh at you. That joke never gets old. It's like they made that they came out with that just to make fun of people. Like, you will buy anything. You are truly goyim. You will buy it. If you bought a Cybertruck, you may truly be a goyim. I somebody out of my audience drives a Cybertruck and they like, I ain't never listening to this guy ever again. I was going to drop a check in the mail to your P.O. box, but you can just listen to me tearing it. I'm going to send the tore up pieces to you. Don't do that. My ass might tape that check back together. Joke will be on you. Be like, I can't believe you deposited that thing. No. But it is. It's like they created the Cybertruck just as like you will. We're making this mocking you. You will actually buy anything if you will buy this thing. The Cybertruck exists as a truck in order to prevent people from any longer being able to mock those who call their Honda Ridgeline a truck. If you drive a Honda Ridgeline and call that a truck, you would normally, you would be subject to ridicule. But thankfully for you, no one can make fun of your Honda Ridgeline because the Cybertruck exists. It exists. It's like they created the Cybertruck just to essentially say, you people will buy anything. You'll buy into anything. You will pay that much money for something that damn ugly that is that impractical. I've seen them. You know, and when you look at one up close, because I've basically driven pickups my whole life. You know, I'm in Texas. And, you know, not all of us, but a lot of us, we actually use our trucks for stuff. And when I look at this thing and I think of the things that I use a pickup for, I have used a pickup for over the course of my life. And I look at that thing, and I mean, it wouldn't do any of those things. I saw a video one time, and it was somebody, they were so proud, and they were on their Cybertruck, and they're like, look, I am off-roading in my Cybertruck. And somebody in the comments immediately pointed out, dude, you're not off-road. You're literally on a road. It just happens to not have pavement. This guy thought he was like four-wheeling in his Cybertruck. Anyway, what? It's all fake and presumably gay. No, the super genius who invented a car company from scratch, just somehow. We never told where the money came from. You know, maybe it's somewhere, and maybe people would be like, "You just don't know." Well, you're right. But you can just see where that legend, you know, that background, that story they tell us. This sounds a lot better, doesn't it? It sounds a lot better than, you know, mega Wall Street hedge fund, obviously colluded with the government, knowing that the carbon credit scam was going to come out, and got themselves in a position to where they were perfectly poised to make billions of dollars off the carbon credit scam. That's what we're talking about. That's what it actually is. So they got to create a story, and everybody buys into the story. I have people tell me all the time, you know, I've had people, let me put it this way, because I go around talking about Elon Musk all the time, so that's not correct. But I have people told me or mentioned, you know, when it comes to this, and they're like, oh, that Elon Musk, you know, that guy's just crazy smart. And I'm like, have you looked at him? Have you actually listened to him? When he's talking about something, I am sitting here doing this show. We're 18 minutes into the show, and I was not lying when I said I had very little idea what we were even going to talk about on this show. And I'm not bragging, but as an average guy, I think I've been able to string several sentences together. I'm honestly kind of having fun with the discussion. You see Elon Musk, and he's sitting there, you know, being interviewed or sitting there giving a talk on stage, and the guy can hardly string a coherent, you know, paragraph together, a few sentences. It just doesn't, you know, and he's obviously had to me, he's had coaching and classes, pronounce things in a way to, you know, come off like, oh, he's very thoughtful. And again, I'm just like, this guy's a goober. You know, I mean, he probably is autistic, but super genius? Not seeing it. The guy can hardly string a couple sentences. He says things, obviously, that are supposed to sound profound. And he's not the only one. He's just like one of the most famous that people always pop. You know, you say tech billionaire or something like that. He's the guy that pops in your mind. But a lot of these guys, you listen to what they have to say. You listen to them talk. You watch a video of them giving a talk somewhere. And yeah, I'm not impressed. You have to think a lot of these ideas are not theirs. They're the front man, just like our politicians are the front man. They're playing the role. When you consider throughout history, you know, actual, real, rare, exceptional, raw intellectual talent that has existed in different periods of time. And none of them were anything like these guys. You know. And isn't it weird? You have all the, we have this old, this is a new thing. You know, when I was young, we didn't have this, you know, this front and center. You ever consider that? Why are these people front and center? You know, I mean, we had rich people when I was a kid growing up, and no one really knew who even knew who they were. I remember back in the 90s, I was a young man then. I wasn't a kid, but, you know, when Ross Perot first ran for president, and basically the media had to introduce this guy and tell us, oh, he's this, you know, Texas millionaire, billionaire. I don't remember if billionaires existed then. I think he was still back when millionaire was a big deal. You know, but he's this super rich Texas guy running for president. Basically, people had to find out, well, who is this guy? And now we have all of these supposed billionaire guys. And they're in front of TV cameras like all the time. They're media celebrities. They're media phenomenon. You know, like I said, they're presented as celebrities no differently than Hollywood actors or singers or anybody else. You ever notice that? That's because if you're young, it's always been that way, so you don't know any different. But if you're older like me, remember that. Think about it. Who were the celebrity billionaires back in the, you know, super rich guys back in the 80s? I mean, we knew who Donald Trump was because he was already a Hollywood guy back then, basically. But I mean, it just, now you have this whole thing where these tech billionaires, because if I say tech billionaires and you hear that, you get a picture of these different ones that we've all seen. They're all in front of the camera all the time with their latest brilliant ideas. They were supposed to be convinced came from them because they're obviously so freaking smart. And we're not supposed to, and here's another question. If they are so smart, and, you know, because we assume, people assume they're smart because they're rich. You ever notice that? There's this assumption that, well, he must be smart. He's rich. If you think you're so clever, how come he's rich and you're not? You notice how people have made that conflation. He's wealthy. That means he must be smart. For the average person, it never dawns on him. Maybe he's a front man. Maybe these guys are actors playing a role. Maybe most of what they have has been provided to them by someone or something else. Who's really backing them? There's no such thing as somebody who just from nothing overnight they're rich. That's bullshit. Yes, there is such thing as people who start off and they get an early start in life and they're adept at making decent business decisions and they are able to grow a business. I'm not saying that doesn't exist. But these guys who are all of a sudden multi-billionaires just overnight, basically. Never heard of them before. All of a sudden, they're on TV all the time and they're these super rich tech billionaires and they're so clever. And you ever notice, I'm trying to wrap up one point before I jump on to another and keep it all straight. And you ever notice none of their grand plans that they come up with are ever anything good? Nobody ever listens to any of these guys. And when they get done talking about what they want to do, sits back and goes, wow, that is going to make my life so much better. Never, ever. We're going to replace you with AI, patrol you with Terminator robots, watch your every move with a camera in and outside of your house, shut your car down if we don't think you have any business driving, and tie you to a digital currency and a digital ID, and by golly, you better do what we say or else. Nobody hears that shit and then goes, wow, I can't wait. I can't wait for the technocracy to take over. God's going to make my life good. Once in a while, they try to sell you a little something. You know, they say, oh, you're going to get a free income from the government and you won't have to do anything. You're going to have universal basic income and you can spend your life smoking weed, masturbating to interracial porn. It's going to be great. I don't think that would be great. And it's not going to happen anyway. Well, they're doing their best to establish their technocracy. And that may or may not work. But as far as you getting your universal basic income and having a comfortable living, that's going to be about as real as Trump's Doge checks we were all going to get. Remember, we were going to get $5,000, and then it was $2,500, then it was $2,000, and then I think they gave like $500 to the army, and then like nothing. Trump's promise for these checks we were going to get from cutting the government waste, it reminds me of that, you know, of the meme, you know. $50? My gosh, $25 is a lot. I can't believe this kid thinks I owe him $5. Jump out the window and run off. That's Trump jumping out the window and running off. The number just kind of went down and then it was nothing. I don't suppose we should be surprised. But there's people out there, they hear that universal basic income and it's like, man, I'm going to get paid to do nothing. Yeah, okay, bro. It's going to be okay. They're saying they're going to police us and replace us and everything else with robots. But hey, they're going to pay me to lay around and jerk off and smoke weed, dude. Okay, bro. If you believe that, good luck. Now, I got into this a little bit with Sven on Friday. Not got into it like arguing. I mean, got into this discussion, this topic a little bit on the Friday Daily Nationalist. It'll be last week now when this airs. You know, and they make these pronouncements. It's gaslighting. They want you to be convinced. See, again, they're telling you a story all the time. And I really see people, even people who are, you know, probably more cognizant of issues going on and things, you know, aware of things, falling for the story and they don't even realize it. Part of the story they tell you is that these people always get what they want. The powers that be. The deep state. Whatever you want to call it. They always get what they want. They have programmed everybody with this sense of inevitability. And now they're flexing on that. Because it's worked. I mean, yeah, I point these things out. Oh, it's so stupid. I know what they're doing. It doesn't work. It works really well. They have programmed people with this sense of inevitability. That's why they come out and announce things that nobody likes. This is a part of it. When you see these stories to where they're going to build a big data center, bulldoze people's homes, suck all the water out, and you'll be living in the dark because we need the electricity for the data center that's allegedly for AI, and it is not for AI. And the people all show up and they protest and they tell every government official they can grab and, you know, we don't want this, no, no to this, and you get it anyway, good and hard. You could call it a humiliation ritual, and that is a part of it. But the other part of it is, this is a part of reinforcing the program of inevitability. So that the next thing they announce, you just throw your hands up and go, well, I guess that's what's coming next, because they're just going to do it to us. And I see people that have that defeatist, inevitable mindset. And I'm often concerned because I tell people, I say on this show all the time, and again, these are always just my opinions. You live your life how you want to. I'm not your boss. I'm not your daddy. I'm not, you know, if you disagree, that's fine. You do you, fam. But I tell people, I say on this show all the time, focus on the things you can do. You sitting here getting all hyped up and worked up over something that the media is telling you the government is going to do and you don't like it. getting emotionally ripped up over it isn't going to change anything. Focus on the things you do have control over, because there's power in that. And I'm often worried that when I talk about that, you know, I'm basically telling, you know, people interpret that as being defeatist, like, you know, that sense of inevitability. That it doesn't matter. They always get. And I've seen people out and out say that. They always get what they want. However they frame it, the left, the Jews, however they frame it, the deep state, they always get what they want. They always win. That's falling for the programming. You know, they have programmed people with this sense. It's intentional. That's why they roll out the next thing, announce it. Not because, why do they even announce this stuff? You're one of that. They announce this stuff, and then, you know, if they're going to do it anyway, regardless of what the people want, why even tell them? Just start building something, or just start doing what you're going to do. It's about reinforcing that sense of inevitability. They always win. They always get what they want. You might as well submit. They want people to have this mindset. Now, yes, you have to ask yourself, why is that? What does it matter? If they're just going to do it anyway, if they can roll in and say, we're going to take all your resources and build a data center, whether you like it or not, whether the people in the community like it or not, so much for our democracy. If they're going to do it anyway, what's the point of going through, you know, programming people with the sense of inevitability? Because there's a difference. How do I want to put this? There is a difference between something being done to you and submitting to it. Does that make sense? This gets into where the spiritual overlaps with what you see in this world. And as Christian believers, we're always looking at that step, one further step back, where you also incorporate and understand the spiritual nature of these things. It's about submitting. You know, it's one thing that they could just do this to you. Programming you with that sense of inevitability leads to the next step of being just basically bowing down and submitting to it. That's when the ridiculous lies come into play, and they demand that you go along with the lies. You know, up is down, down is up, evil is good, and good is evil. Money is the value of a man. A man must be smart. He must be of high value. He has money. Even though, historically speaking, this is like an absurd, you know, it's an absurd notion. Think of somebody in the Bible, you know, like John the Baptist. Heck, Jesus himself wasn't rich. If money is the measure of if a man is intelligent or has great insight, then these were nobodies by that metric. You see, it's all overlaps. Whoever's around, if the Lord hasn't wrapped up this experiment, this exercise of this world by then, in 200 years, is anybody going to know who Peter Thiel is, Elon Musk, any of these guys playing these roles? But we're several thousand years in the future, and regardless of religion or whatever, there's virtually no one on the face of the planet who does not know who Jesus Christ is. And he wasn't rich. He didn't have massive media exposure. You see, but we have submitted the people, but the people in general have submitted to this notion. He's rich. He must be smart. Must be of high value. Must be very powerful. Now, I want to circle back to the importance of the idea of submitting, because this gets into the spiritual nature of why they do these things. Again, they come in, they say they're going to do this, people protest, and you know, swarm a government meeting and demand that it not be done, and it gets done anyway, rubbed in your face anyway. Oh. So what's the point? Why not just do it without even telling anybody? It's not like they're going to stop. Because when it becomes inevitable, you just if you absorb and internalize the sense of inevitability, you are making them omnipotent. And it becomes a form of idolatry. It becomes a form of worship, if you would. And that gets to the spiritual nature. You see, it's a short step from, I guess in one way to look at it is it's a short step from they're doing this to me to, you know, in order to mentally cope with it, you start telling yourself, this isn't being done to me. I want it. I agree with it. I believe one of the best illustrations of this in work was what we saw some of the stuff during the whole COVID nonsense. You know, by the time that thing was halfway to three quarters away, we were through all of that. The things they were telling people to do, the narratives they were giving were getting more and more absurd. The demands, the quote-unquote health experts' advice was getting more and more absurd. Starting with, well, tie a bandana over your face and it'll stop the spread of this deadly virus that you can't see. To the arbitrary number of 6 foot apart. And like I say, they started with that, which people could at least say, you know, okay, maybe, because if I sneezed, it wouldn't go as far. That might stop the spread of the virus, I guess. You know, people could at least try to kind of reason. And then it got ridiculous. Maybe you should wear, remember when Fauci said maybe you should wear like 3 or 4 masks? Just like at this point, making fun of people, making a mockery. And it was. Put a face shield on, too. And then there were the more draconian steps. You know, your grandmother's dying in a home or in the hospital of old age, you know, cancer or whatever. And you can't go say your goodbyes because there's a virus. And you could give it to her. She 2 days away from dying of cancer. But we can't have you giving her the virus. You know, just the absurdities. It's getting you to submit and go along. That's the purpose. Because, you know, we talk about how absurd some of this stuff is, and it's absurd. I remember saying at the time, it's a lie and an absurd lie, and it is done so on purpose. You're supposed to see that it's a lie. You see, if there's plausible believability to it, then you're just being tricked. You know, you're just being tricked. If you know it's stupid, in your heart of hearts, you know what's being demanded of you is absurd and stupid and obviously bullshit, and you submit and go along with it, then you've submitted to the lie and the lies of the devil. You see, this is where the Christian faith, it's not just something you like a separate hobby you do on Sunday. It's something that means something in your life. You know, this whole show, I'm 39 minutes in now, you know, and some of you are like, where's the Christian specific segment? You know, when are you going to get it? You know, Christian, very Christian specific. And we've kind of just done it here. But in my mind, virtually everything we've discussed in the 39 minutes is Christian because Jesus is of the truth. It's the center word he used to describe who he was. The truth in and of itself is related to Christ. And if that's true, and I 100% believe it is, Jesus said it was. And Jesus also said the devil is what? A liar and a murderer. So it tells us if the central word to describe who Jesus is truth, then these lies are the central word of who Satan is. See, you step back and you see the spiritual nature. One of the reasons I think they've created this Hollywood version of the devil and demons and what that looks like, again, it's all programming. You know, is so that people is another layer to blind people the spiritual nature of the world around us. If they don't see some kind of creepy dark entity walking on its back with disjointed legs, going with horns and black smoke coming out its nostrils, they don't recognize the satanic nature of it. You know, they're creeping around in a haunted house, wondering if they're going to encounter a demon. They see one. You know, they watch these scary. You watch these scary videos because I watch some of them sometimes. You know, people put up, you know, this video was captured on surveillance camera. And of course, 9 times out of 10 of those, I'm just like, your surveillance camera looks like it's from 1988 or something, because that is some bad quality. I'm supposed to think that's a ghost. But anyway, people be creeping around in a haunted house trying to find it. You know, well, am I going to run into a demonic entity? Man, turn on the news. You can see all the demons you want to see. It's every day. You want to see Satan at work? It's every day. Turn on the news. You can catch a good dose. If the one of the central natures of Jesus Christ is the truth, then one of the central natures of Satan is the lie. And this is why. This is why they gaslight you. This is why they want you to go through this submission ritual. Because you submit to the lie, and you know it's a lie. You know, who's got you by the short ones? They program us. You have, my dear listener, you have been programmed your whole life and didn't even know it. Don't feel bad. It's not your fault. It was done to you. It was done to me, too. And when you start to see it, you see it. You know, I had the movies, TV, media. You know, when you think about, you know, how it works, we grew up watching these shows like Star Trek or movies like Star Wars. And you fast forward to today and they're giving you some big story about one of their money, you know, one of their money scams of how we're going to build a moon base. Yeah. Oh, they're going to build a moon base and it's going to be powered by nuclear energy. And then we're going to launch from the moon base to Mars. It's stupid. It's absurd. But you see, people have a lifetime of watching Captain Picard on the Enterprise and shit. And so they think it's real because that's what pops into their minds. It's what pops in their brains. Because when their brain saw these videos, these TV shows, these stories, it files that away. So when they hear something similar, your brain needs something to reference, so it pulls that file up. And even though when you saw it, you knew it was fiction, you didn't think it was real, but this is what your brain uses as a reference point. They're talking about moon bases and flying through space in a colony on Mars. You got to figure out some way to process that. So your brain goes, well, this file here from Star Trek Deep Space Nine is the closest thing I've got to reference, so we'll reference that. And that's what you visualize in your brain. It's programming. Programmed us whole life. And it's not that you're going to make no moon base. Ain't going to Mars. None of that shit's real. It's just another money scam. They're moving money somewhere and they ain't going to tell you where. Lining people's pockets, but you know, they give you a story. This is what you get. You give NASA billions and billions of dollars and all you get for it is some crappy CGI and a story. And they're always telling stories. We got this latest virus and I was looking for it. You start looking for it because we've been through it. I like to call it the hentai virus, you know. The hentai virus. The latest virus. And when that story first broke recently, when the news started talking about it, I'm looking for it, and almost instantly it was there. You know, they're doing the story behind the actor who's paid to read a script in front of your TV screen and tell you this is the news. You know, they always have that thing behind them. You know, it's an image that you're supposed to associate with the story they're telling you. There's always an image. And there's that ship. The ship with the hentai virus on it. And I'm looking for it. What was I looking for? I'm looking for it, and I saw it almost instantly. The computer-generated picture of the virus. You know? There it was. Now, the very first one I saw, they didn't have it done yet. Because they literally put up a picture of the COVID virus. The COVID picture they were using for the COVID virus with the little spikes on. But, you know, I maybe they were like, we don't have it done yet. We'll have it done in another week. But sure enough, within a few days or so, we had a new picture. You know, and those pictures are as real as the pictures from their outer space missions. They will tell you. They ain't seen no virus. But you get this nice colorful ball with these little pointed things coming off. You know, now the COVID one had that particular pointed ball thing. And that's what I saw at first. I'm like, that's the same picture of the COVID virus. They ain't got it done yet. A few days later, here we go. We got another ball. The virus is always a ball, by the way, which is weird. Because actual microscopic things, you know, you have like amoebas and different things that you can actually see under a microscope. And they're all kinds of different shapes. Hell, they'll change shapes right in front of you. But the viruses that, again, they can't see, they're always a ball. They can't see it, but they're going to give you a picture of it. It's got to look a little bit different. There was a nice picture for you of this is what the hentai virus looks like. I think it would have been funnier if they could have made a misspeak and say hentai virus, you know, and it'd be like, I don't know, an anime animal girl scantily clothed, you know, lean back or something. The hentai virus is coming. It's coming for everybody. Now, as I said, you should not get this sense of an inevitability. Because I touched on this on the Friday show with Sven a little bit. You know, don't ever forget the people that are saying they're going to do all of these things. Enact a digital currency, a digital ID, monitor you 24/7, all these grand plans. These are the same people that were shocked that when they attacked Iran, they shut down the Strait of Hormuz. And don't, this is a part of the reason why they give you this narrative of super geniuses, so that, you know, how can you counter a super genius? Don't give them all that. Don't, you know. Don't fall for it. You know, their grand plans may not work, is what I'm saying. There was, as we talked about that on that show on Friday, I was saying, you know, what they're wanting to do, what they're proposing to do is to create a virtual Gaza Strip. They can't, you know, again, we talked about this on the Friday Daily National, so I don't mean to be rehashing it, but for what I want to point out here, I have to go back to that. Not everybody listening to this has listened to that. So, you know, they basically, the plan was to migrate, as the U.S. collapsed, to migrate the operation to China. I think they basically got politely, they've been politely over the years told no. And so now they're stuck on the sinking ship. So they don't know a new playbook. So they're going to institute the Israeli model. They can't herd us into a Gaza Strip and put a big fence around us like they've done to the Palestinians. So they're creating all of this digital surveillance nonsense and all the rest of it. It is about basically making a virtual Gaza Strip. You're not technically going to be in a camp, but when there's a camera watching you wipe your ass, you're in a camp. You're free to go when you're told you can go. That requires a massive amount of submission. And as I said on that show, it stands to reason, if you're going to create a digital Gaza Strip, you're also going to create a Hamas. Because the reality is Hamas didn't just spring up out of nothing. Hezbollah did not spring up out of nothing. They sprung up as a result of. Again, this is just observation. No, this is not me inciting terrorism. If you're in Great Britain, I'm sorry. Not under your crappy laws anyway, but no, it's just it's an observable fact. Those entities, those groups didn't come out of nothing. What I mean by that, to be specific, is going to, if they can even pull it off, and I'm pretty skeptical about how realistic these plans of theirs are. But if they even manage to pull it off, there's a segment of the population that ain't going to go along with that shit. If you have 30 million people in the country, and I don't feel like looking up the exact number. I think it's a little more than that. But I'm just going to say 30 million people in the U.S. If 10% of them don't go along with it, you got a 3 million man army, which is way more dudes than you got. See, this is why they need people submitting. And it's worse than that, because it's not 3 million man organized army. If that was the case, you can target leadership like Israel tries to do to Hezbollah and Iran, for that matter. It's worse than that, because it's 3 million people that out of those are maybe a few small groups, but the vast majority being their admitted nightmare scenario of lone wolves. And they're building all these data centers, which people in, who reject the system are going to view as targets, and they're everywhere, and you don't even have to attack them. They can sabotage the fuel supply for the generators, blow up a substation. It's been public knowledge for years, that there are like these very few of these critical points for the entire electric grid in the U.S. That is public knowledge. Got 3 million people that disagree with what's being imposed on everybody else. Those critical points are going to be one of the first things hit. Then what do you plan to do? They fed everybody the narrative of the mighty IDF, and they've leveled Gaza, but they don't hold it. Why? Because Hamas is still there. So the point here is... The point here is, they're not that smart. It's not inevitable. Like I said, I look at everything that's got to come together for this plan to work. And I think they're really overhyping the likelihood. Now you sit here and say, but you just said a bunch of this is all the devil is at the center of it. Who says the devil always gets his way? What the hell? If you're a Christian, if you don't have a belief, then you don't believe in the devil. If you're a Christian believer, why the hell are you giving Satan all this power? Oh, he always wins. What? Hello? We're on the other team. If you go into a match, going, well, we can't beat these guys, you can have all kinds of problems. You probably ain't going to beat them if that's your attitude. You can be on Team Jesus Christ and be like, oh, shit, if this is from Satan, there ain't nothing we can do. Let's throw up our hands and give up. Not the kind of guys you want on your team. Satan always wins. What a Christian view. And then I'd be like, well, I mean, eventually the final battle will be won when Jesus comes back and fights for us. But until then, Satan always wins. Satan is in this realm because he lost. It is written, there was war in heaven. And he lost and got cast down into the temporal realm as just kind of a holding spot for now. And he was enraged because he knows his time is short. And time is short means he's in a temporal realm. He was here where time doesn't count. And now he's cast down into the temporal realm. Doesn't matter if you're talking thousands of years. It's in comparison to where time doesn't exist. His time is short. He's not happy. It wasn't his choice. But he always wins. The crucifixion of Jesus Christ. I've talked about it before. When you really think about it, Satan got maneuvered into a no-win situation, you know. I am of the viewpoint that at that time, again, you have the front men for the devil, but as far as Satan himself, he didn't want to crucify Jesus. But he got into a no-win situation. He had to make a choice. You know, let him be, and essentially the whole thing is over now, or buy some time and crucify him. You know, he had a no-win choice. He didn't want to. That was the whole point of the temptation in the desert. He was trying to negotiate. It's like war. It's spiritual war. In war, it's just politics, you know, an extension of politics. If you can't negotiate something, then you send your army in and try to force to get what you want politically, your political goals. It's not how much you blow up or how much you destroy. It's if you achieve your political goals. If you can achieve that with diplomacy, you achieve it with diplomacy. If Israel could achieve their political goals with negotiations with Hezbollah, they would do that. It's a lot cheaper and a lot easier on them than doing it by war. They cannot do that, so they go to war. The temptation in the desert is the devil doing diplomacy. And he offered a lot as far as what he had. The kingdoms of the world. Prove this, prove that, do this, do that. And I'll give you the kingdoms of the world if you'll bow down and worship me. Now, it is interesting because, you know, part of it is he's telling Jesus, well, if you're really the Son of God, throw yourself off of this tower. You won't die because the Bible says, the scriptures are written. Do this, do that, prove your... And then he turns around as if first it's proved that's who you are. Then he turns around and is like, well, if you'll bow down and worship me, well, if he's not the Son of God, then what do you care if he worships you or not? First, you need convincing. Well, now, bow down and worship me, and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. That was the negotiation. That was the diplomacy to see if he could diplomatically settle it. Negotiations failed. Negotiations failed. So war it is. And he got maneuvered. Got Jesus executed, but he didn't achieve his, for lack of a better term, political goals. He got maneuvered into a situation of let this guy, you know, let Jesus be, and basically the whole thing's over now because he'll eventually establish a kingdom here on earth now. People are going to quit listening to my servants out here, so I can't allow that. Or I can have him executed, but if I have him killed, that's not going to achieve my goals either. This could take off. This could go. If I can't nip it in the bud after that, then it's going to expand, and that gives me countless millions of others to deal with as an opposing force versus a handful of dudes. It's a no-win. Israel's leveled the Gaza Strip. But they haven't won. Why? Because Hamas still holds it. They can't go in there and hold the territory. So they haven't won. They haven't achieved their goal. Likewise, Satan had Jesus executed. But he didn't achieve his goal, did he? The point here is don't have this idea that when the devil always wins. My viewpoint is opposite is the case. No matter what he does, he's always outmaneuvered. the Lord is always like umpteen steps ahead because God exists outside of time. He already sees the decisions everybody's going to make. This is why the devil is so mad when he got cast into this temporal realm, because now he has to operate like the rest of us in time. The Lord stands back and sees the whole picture. This person, everybody has free will, but he already knows the decisions because he sees it outside of time. This person is going to decide that, so these people are going to wind up here, and this is it all works out. Devil's over here trying to plan on a grander scale than the rest of us, but he's still basically planning the same way we would have to plan. There's unknowns. There's factors that are going to happen that he can't figure in. He can't factor those in. He's got to guess, do his best to guess, but it could still blow up in his face. I hate it. I do. I absolutely hate it when Christian believers are like, well, if it's a devil involved, oh my gosh, he's going to win. There's nothing we can do about it. Come on now. I look at these plans and these ideas and I think, man, y'all are sure there's a whole lot of things got to come together for that to work out. And if it does work out, what are you going to do about whatever percentage of the population, which is sizable, that is going to downright absolutely refuse to go along? And then what? How much damage are they going to do? Are you going to be able to contain it? Don't think the devil has the idea. He don't know either. He's in time. He doesn't know either. He's got to just guess. He can predict. And, I'm not saying he's dumb and he doesn't know. But, I mean, he can, have a good idea and be able to do some figures and try to figure things out. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have that eternal view. A lot of things got to come together, a lot of variables. I don't have an inevitable, oh, they're just going to impose this on us and there's nothing we can do about it. I mean, I'm sure that's what they intend to do. How successful it's going to be, I don't know. How many people are going to submit? How many people are going to bow down? At the end of the day, it is always... You have to see that whole picture. And there is at its core, I've said this so many times, but to understand the world around us, you have to understand the spiritual nature of things. That is the true big picture. The devil's a liar and a murderer, and we wonder why we're lied to all the time. We're constantly given these stories. And then people are like, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know. If somebody had only told us who the father of lies and who when he lies, it's his native tongue. If somebody had only told us who that comes from, we might have enough. Oh! And again, it's fine. We're unbelievers that don't have any initiation with the faith. I can understand. It's just ignorance. It's not something I'm not ridiculing or mocking. They're just ignorant. Nobody's told them or they haven't heard it or understood it. But when I hear supposed Christian believers have that same exact attitude, I don't know, man. Better spend some more time. I'd just say for a believer like that, you better spend some more time in the faith. Trying to understand and trying to get to know who it is you serve. Anyway, we got to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed today's random discussion. I know I enjoyed having it. And it was pretty random, but I think it was, I think it's enlightening. I like to think it was, I got something, but let me put it this way. Speaking these things out, I'm thinking, it encourages me and it makes me think of new things. And I hope maybe it's done the same for you. Either way, once again, I do appreciate you stopping by and giving the show a listen. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And maybe we'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.